the Book of Judges. It's a tale of chaos unleashed, of violence unchained, and of a moral compass spinning wildly out of control. Ancient Israel's story? Perhaps. But as we peel back the pages, we'll find a mirror reflecting our own tumultuous times. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Sound familiar? Well, join us over the next few weeks as we study the Book of Judges, ancient wisdom for modern chaos. Our story begins now. Judges chapter 9. Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal, went to his mother's brothers in Shechem and said to them and all his mother's clan, "Ask all the citizens of Shechem which is better for you, to have all 70 of Jerubbaal's sons rule over you, or just one man. Remember, I am your flesh and blood." When the brothers repeated all this to the citizens of Shechem, they were inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, "He is related to us." They gave him 70 shekels of silver from the temple of Baal-berit, and Abimelech used it to hire reckless scoundrels who became his followers. He went to his father's home in Ophrah and on one stone murdered his 70 brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, escaped by hiding. Then all the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo gathered beside the great tree at the pillar of Shechem to crown Abimelech king. When Jotham was told about this, he climbed up on the top of Mount Gerizim and shouted to them, "Listen to me, citizens of Shechem, so that God may listen to you. One day the trees went out to anoint a king for themselves. They said to the olive tree, 'Be our king.' But the olive tree answered, 'Should I give up my oil, by which both gods and humans are honored, to hold sway over the trees?' Next the tree said to the fig tree, 'Come and be our king.' But the fig tree replied, 'Should I give up my fruit, so good and sweet, to hold sway over the trees?' Then the trees said to the vine, 'Come and be our king.' But the vine answered, 'Should I give up my wine, which both cheers both gods and humans, to hold sway over the trees?' Finally, all the trees said to the thorn bush, 'Come and be our king.' The thorn bush said to the trees, 'If you really want to anoint me king over you, come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, then let fire come out from the thorn bush and consume the cedars of Lebanon. Have you acted honorably and in good faith by making Abimelech king? Have you been fair to Jerubbaal and his family? Have you treated him as he deserves? Remember that my father fought for you and risked his life to rescue you from the hand of Midian. But today you have revolted against my father's family. You have murdered his 70 sons on a single stone and have made Abimelech, the son of his female slave, king over the citizens of Shechem, because he is related to you. So have you acted honorably and in good faith toward Jerubbaal and his family today? If you have, may Abimelech be your joy, and may you be his too. But if you have not, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo. And let fire come out from you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo, and consume Abimelech." Then Jotham fled, escaping to Beer. And he lived there because he was afraid of his brother Abimelech. After Abimelech had governed Israel for 3 years, God stirred up animosity between Abimelech and the citizens of Shechem so that they acted treacherously against Abimelech. God did this in order that the crime against Jerubbaal's 70 sons, the shedding of their blood, might be avenged on their brother Abimelech and on the citizens of Shechem who had helped him murder his brothers. In opposition to him, these citizens of Shechem set men on the hilltops to ambush and rob everyone who passed by. And this was reported to Abimelech. Now Gaal, son of Ered, moved with his clan into Shechem, and its citizens put their confidence in him. After they had gone out into the fields and gathered the grapes and trodden them, they held a festival in the temple of their gods. While they were eating and drinking, they cursed Abimelech. Then Gaal, son of Ered, said, "Who is Abimelech? And why should we, Shechemites, be subject to him? Isn't he Jerubbaal's son? And isn't Zebul his deputy? Serve the family of Hamor, Shechem's father. Why should we serve Abimelech? if only this people were under my commands, then I would get rid of him. I would say to Abimelech, call out your whole army. When Zebul, the governor of the city, heard what Gaal, son of Ebed, said, he was very angry. Under cover, he sent messengers to Abimelech saying, Gaal, son of Ebed, and his clan have come to Shechem and are stirring up the city against you. Now then, during the night, you and your men should come and lie in wait in the fields. In the morning at sunrise, advance against the city. When Gaal and his men come out against you, seize the opportunity to attack them. So Abimelech and all his troops set out by night and took up concealed positions near Shechem in four companies. Now Gaal, son of Ebed, had gone out and was standing at the entrance of the city gate, just as Abimelech and his troops came out from their hiding place. When Gaal saw them, he said to Zebul, look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains. Zebul replied, you mistake the shadows of the mountains for men. But Gaal spoke up again, look, people are coming down from the central hill, and a company is coming from the direction of the diviner's tree. Then Zebul said to him, where is your big talk now, you who said, who is Abimelech that we should be subject to him? Aren't these the men you ridiculed? Go out and fight them. So Gaal led out the citizens of Shechem and fought Abimelech. Abimelech chased him all the way to the entrance of the gate, and many were killed as they fled. Then Abimelech stayed in Arumah, and Zebul drove Gaal and his clan out of Shechem. The next day, the people of Shechem went out to the fields, and this was reported to Abimelech. So he took his men, divided them into three companies, and set an ambush in the fields. When he saw the people coming out of the city, he rose to attack them. Abimelech and the companies with him rushed forwards to a position at the entrance of the city gate. Then two companies attacked those in the fields and struck them down. All that day, Abimelech pressed his attack against the city until he had captured it and killed its people. Then he destroyed the city and scattered salt over it. On hearing this, the citizens of the Tower of Shechem went into the stronghold of the temple of El Berit. When Abimelech heard that they had assembled there, he and all his men went up to Mount Zalmon. They took an axe and cut off some branches, which he lifted to his shoulders. He ordered the men with him, quick, do what you have seen me do. So all the men cut branches and followed Abimelech. They piled them against the stronghold and set it on fire with the people still inside. So all the people in the Tower of Shechem, about 1,000 men and women, also died. Next, Abimelech went to Thebes and besieged it and captured it. Inside the city, however, was a strong tower to which all the men and women, all the people of the city had fled. They had locked themselves in and climbed up on the tower roof. Abimelech went to the tower and attacked it. But as he approached the entrance to the tower to set it on fire, a woman dropped an upper millstone on his head and cracked his skull. Hurriedly, he called to his armor bearer, draw your sword and kill me, so they cannot say a woman killed him. So his servant ran him through, and he died. When the Israelites saw that Abimelech was dead, they went home. Thus God repaid the wickedness that Abimelech had done to his father by murdering his seven brothers. God also made the people of Shechem pay for all their wickedness. The curse of Jotham, son of Jerubbaal, came on them. Politics. That word makes some people lean in, makes other people think about running to the door. I mean, just look at this week. Elon Musk, one of the most powerful people in the world, promotes Nigel Farage. Woohoo, he says. And then, awkwardly, drops him the next day. And we all watch that drama unfold, don't we? One person climbs up, another person gets torn down. That's politics, isn't it? It's a thorny game of who gets to be in charge. And just like any thorny bush, it promises shelter, but often leaves us scratched and bleeding. But as we've just seen, that isn't just a modern day problem. It's a problem as old as time. And today we get to see where it leads. What happens when we forget who rules over us? What happens when we choose thorns instead of shelter? What happens when we stop listening to God? Judges 9 shows us the answer. The answer is forgetting God always comes with consequences. We're picking up this evening where we were before Christmas in the Book of Judges with Abimelech. And just like in another garden long ago, we're going to see what happens when God's people forget who their true ruler is. But before we get going, it's worth glancing at the last few verses of his dad's life back in chapter 8. Have a look at Judges 8, verse 34 and 35. Let's go from verse 33. See, no sooner had Gideon died than the Israelites again prostituted themselves to the Baals. They set up Baal Berit as their god and did not remember the Lord their God who had rescued them from the hands of all their enemies on every side. They also failed to show any loyalty to the family of Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, in spite of all the good things he had done for them. You see there? The Israelites have forgotten the Lord, the one who rescued them from their enemies. And it shows in their lack of loyalty to Gideon as well. So tonight, at the centre of this book of Judges, we find ourselves right in the heart, right in the middle of the land of Israel. Shechem is exactly in the centre. And what we find here, what we find in this heart, is not pretty. Because from now on, the downward spiral of Judges is going to pick up speed. The people have forgotten God's rule, and where's that going to lead them? Well, Judges chapter 9, forgetting God's rule leads to a world ruled by thorns. Forgetting God's rule leads to a world ruled by thorns. See, the people have forgotten God's rule, and what grows in the forgotten space? Well, it's thorns. It's not just a few prickles. It is a whole world ruled by thorns. As I said, this is a turning point in Judges. Until now, the threats have come from the outside. Those big, bad, doubly wicked foreign kings. But now, did you notice? The thorns are growing within. Have a look down at verse 1. Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal, went to his mother's brothers in Shechem and said to them and to all his mother's clan, "Ask all the citizens of Shechem, which is better for you? To have all 70 of Jerubbaal's sons rule over you, or just one man? Remember, I am your flesh and blood." Now, if we know the pattern of Judges, that is the point that the bad guy gets named. Remember, they go away from God, and then a bad guy comes. This is the bad guy in this part of Judges. The bad guy is a man from Gideon's line. The bad guy is from inside. The Canaanization of Israel, as one guy puts it, is now in full swing. And the issue here, remember, Judges is all about compromise. Where is the compromise here? Well, the people are fine with it. That's where they're compromising. Thorns. Oh, well, we can cope with some thorns. I mean, a bramble in the garden, at least it's only one, eh? We can do the same thing, can't we? A thorn. Oh, it's just a thorn. It's fine. We can cope with that. We can tolerate one. But these thorns, they shouldn't surprise us. You see, right from page 3 of our Bibles, of these Red Church Bibles, Genesis chapter 3, when Adam and Eve forgot God's rule, what popped up? Thorns. It's almost like Judges wants us to see the curse being played out again. And just like Genesis 3, just like Judges 9, these thorns, they don't stay contained. One compromise leads to another. One small thorn bush becomes a whole thorny forest. Well, let's see this tragic state of affairs, shall we? The first thing to see this evening is this. Forgetting God breeds disloyalty. Verses 1 to 6. Using the word breed there because Abimelech is the offspring of Gideon. So verse 1, back to Abimelech. His name, do you remember, if you remember this before Christmas, his name literally means, "My father is king." I mean, there's the thorns already starting to show. His name betrays the problem. Abimelech is what happens when God's people start to play power games. He is the son of Gideon's concubine. He is born into the margins of power, and he is hungry for the center. So where does he go? Well, he goes to a place called Shechem. And Shechem, that's the place in Deuteronomy where Israel once had renewed their covenant with God. I mean, the irony would be beautiful if it wasn't so tragic. And look at verse 2 with me. Watch how the thorn spread. He gathers his mother's relatives and he makes his pitch. Which is better? To be ruled by 70 kings or just one? Besides, I'm your flesh and blood. And the thorns, they continue to grow. The people take money from the pagan temple, from the temple of Baal Berit. That means the god of the covenant. You see the mockery there. They're breaking God's covenant whilst using money from a false covenant god. And then verse 5. This is where the thorns draw blood. 70 brothers killed on one stone. I mean, it bodes well, doesn't it, to be his own flesh and blood. Just remember what he just said to the people of Shechem. In fact, if you remember all the way back to Judges chapter 1, the last person to kill exactly 70 people was a guy called Adonai Bezek back in chapter 1. He was the enemy of the Canaanite. Oh, he was the Canaanite king, the enemy faced in Judges 1. And the point's being made, Israel doesn't just live among the Canaanites anymore. Israel have become the Canaanites themselves. So as I said, the author of Judges has placed Abimelech right into the bad guy slot. So what we need is God to deliver Israel from him. But what happens? Verse 6, this is truly chilling. Instead of that, what do the people do? Well, the people gather and they crown Abimelech king. You see here, the people are complicit. These aren't just Abimelech's thorns anymore. The people are complicit too. The whole garden is infested with this thorny bush. And so as with Genesis 3, so with Judges 9. Thorns result. Have a look down at verses 7 to 21. You see, one brother escapes. The youngest one, Jotham. And he climbs, verse 7, up Mount Gerizim. And this location matters too. It's the mountain of blessing, where Israel once stood to hear God's blessings, God's promises. But today, they're going to hear curses. And so Jotham tells them a story about trees. And not just any old tree, but trees looking for a king. Do you see how it unfolds, verse 8? The people, they go to the olive tree, verses 8 and 9. But the olive refuses. So the people go to the fig tree, verses 10 and 11. But the fig tree refuses. So they go to the vine, verses 12 to 13. But the vine refuses. And do you see that repeated line there? None of them want to hold sway over the trees. But it's as if they scrape the barrel, and one finally will do it, verse 14. Finally, all the trees said to the thorn bush, let's clock that, the thorn bush, come and be our king. They say to the prickly shrub, come be our king. And so the thorn bush says, verse 15, if you really want to anoint me king over you, come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, then let fire come out of the thorn bush and consume the cedars of Lebanon. I've got two lessons for you this evening about sheltering in a thorn bush. Number one, it's not much shelter. And number two, ouch. But that's what happens, isn't it, when we forget God's rule. We end up choosing thorns. Worse, we convince ourselves that thorns are the best thing we could hope for. And all of this whole situation has come from disloyalty. It's all come out of that part of 8, 34 and 35, where they've forgotten God. Or as verse 16 says, have you acted honourably and in good faith by making Abimelech king? Have you been fair to Jeroboam and his family? Have you treated him as he deserves? See, disloyalty leads to thorns. What Jotham is saying in this parable, this like Aesop's fable-style story, is that anointing Abimelech is not going to be an honourable thing like an olive tree. It's not going to be a sweet thing like a fig tree. It's not even going to be a cheerful thing like a vine. It's going to be like sheltering under a thorn bush. And because the people have not acted honourably, they have not acted with good faith, that is what they get. You could say they sow the wind and they reap the whirlwind. Forgetting God's rule always leads to thorns. And do you spot verse 20? It also leads to fire. The people and their ruler being consumed. Forgetting God leads to thorns. And so that's what happens, isn't it? I mean, we don't have time to run through all the detail here, but it looks like politics of any age, doesn't it? The thorns start to tear everything apart. Verse 25, Shechem's leaders, well, they turn to highway robbery. And in verse 26, we meet Gaal, the son of Ebed. And don't miss those names. Let me tell you what they literally mean. Gaal means loathsome. And son of Ebed means son of a slave. So this is a loathsome son of a slave. Abimelech has been described as an unwanted son of a slave in this chapter. Gaal is even more rejected than Abimelech. And that's how this game works, isn't it? If you're going to win popularity through something, well, there's always someone who is willing to go further than you. There is always a bigger thorn out there. And what happens is pure chaos. Gaal and Abimelech fight. Abimelech wins. Abimelech turns on Gaal's supporters. And verse 45, he captures the city, he kills the people, and he pours salt over the whole thing. Death followed by death followed by more death. In fact, as you read through this chapter, maybe you're getting echoes of Gideon. It's very similar language, what he's doing here. Even more so, verse 46, just like his dad, he sees a tower. And so he takes branches and he calls the people to do what they see him do. That is what looks good in their eyes. And so the men cut branches and follow Abimelech. They piled them up against the stronghold and set it on fire with the people still inside. So all the people in the tower of Shechem, about 1,000 men and women, also died. Just as Jotham said would happen, right? Just as Abimelech had treated his own brothers earlier, right? Not a surprise. But it doesn't end there. Verse 50 to 55, he carries on his rampage. He ends up in a place called Thebes. And again, he besieges and he captures. And then he must have some kind of PTSD or something because he gets triggered again because he sees a tower. So what does he do? Verse 52, Abimelech goes to the tower. He attacks it and he approaches it to set fire to the tower. It's the same playbook again, isn't it? But, verse 53, a woman dropped an upper millstone on his head and cracked his skull. It literally says an unknown woman, wants to make that point here. An unknown woman just happens to drop an upper millstone out the window. That's a stone about 2 to 4 kilograms big. And it just so happens that that small little stone happens to land just on Abimelech's head and it cracks his skull. And there he drops. Just clock that. Big shot Abimelech, causing carnage throughout the land, defeated by some unnamed woman, with a stone. Pure chance, right? In fact, just clock that once more. A disloyal, death-bringing, thorny snake of a man having his head crushed by a woman. Verse 54. Hurriedly, he called to his armor-bearer, "Draw your sword and kill me, so they cannot say a woman killed him." So his servant ran him through, and he died. Just like that, it's all over. It's embarrassing, really, isn't it? But that makes the point, actually, that underlines all of this. And that is, all along, God is still on the throne. Do you notice God's been pretty absent through this whole narrative? His covenant name, the Lord, Yahweh, completely absent from the story. It's as if he has been forgotten. Because that's what's happened, isn't it? But we are told two things that we have jumped over. Let's take us back, verse 23. We get told explicitly there, God stirred up animosity between Abimelech and the citizens of Shechem, so that they acted treacherously against Abimelech. God did this in order that the crime against Jerubbaal's 70 sons, the shedding of their blood, might be avenged on their brother Abimelech, and on the citizens of Shechem, who had helped him murder his brothers. And then at the end of that section, verses 56 and 57, thus God repaid the wickedness that Abimelech had done to his father by murdering his 70 brothers. God also made the people of Shechem pay for their wickedness. The curse of Jotham, son of Jerubbaal, had come on them. Do you see the point there? In all that narrative of scoundrels and Gaal and towers and a stone, who was behind the whole thing? It was God. Because even when disloyalty is rife, even when God is forgotten, even then God is still on the throne. God is not affected by whether someone thinks he's in charge or not. It's like not believing gravity. You are still going to fall off the cliff if you walk off the edge, whether you believe in gravity or not. And so justice will always be done. History will always go where God is leading it. And so in a roundabout way, that is how God delivered Israel from Israel. All along, God is still on the throne. So what do we take away from this? Well, this should be a warning and a comfort at the same time. They're two sides of exactly the same coin. Rejecting God's rule, forgetting God's rule, is going to lead to thorny situations. It's going to lead to people out for their chance to sway above the trees, to get power for themselves. But ever since day 7, ever since Judges 9, God has said he will deal with thorns. God will crush heads. God will give justice. And that is good and bad news at the same time, isn't it? Because if you are tolerating thorns in any way, the thing about thorns is that they burn. They will burn. And as we see here, both Abimelech and the people reap the consequences of the thorns on fire. Because God is in the habit of crushing heads. From the very first page of the Bible, Satan is told, he will crush your heads. God is the God of justice. For this law to this world is going to be dealt with. Because that's what God does. He crushes thorny rulers. He brings down those who exalt themselves. And ultimately, he sent his own son to wear a crown of thorns to break the power of all our thorny ambitions once and for all. Do you get the point? Thorns are not going to succeed. So Judges wants us to know that when you see political games around you, when you're tempted to play power games yourself, we need to remember that God is still on the throne. And God will deal with thorns because his kingdom is going to be thornless.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Any questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com. I'll see you again next time.